Community building and activist organization open to all genders that works to promote equality and justice. For more information, nomasboston.org. On Sunday, the Community Church of Boston Sunday Speakers Forum presents the Boston Workers Alliance, speaking about successes and compromises in the struggle to reform Cory. After years of organizing and community efforts, the Cory Reform Bill has made another big step and passed the State House of Representatives. The congregation will discuss the process and next steps. Yeah, that's better. The Boston Workers Alliance is a member-run organization that works with people impacted by Cory and other unemployed workers. That's the Sunday Speakers Forum at the Community Church of Boston, 565 Boylston Street in Copley Square. Visit communitychurchofboston.org for more information. And there will be protests outside of two pro-Israel events happening this Sunday. 1 p.m. is New England Celebrates Israel at the Gann Academy in Waltham. It's a large annual festival celebrating the establishment of the State of Israel. And the event is organized by Combined Jewish Philanthropies, and there will be protesters against Israel and its blockade of Gaza outside on Forest Street in Waltham Sunday afternoon. Sunday at 5:30, APAC, the American Israel Political Action Committee, is having its New England Leadership Dinner in Boston at the Sheraton Boston Hotel, which is located near the Prudential Center Mall. People will be protesting on Dalton Street outside of the hotel. Keynote speaker for the dinner is Senator Scott Brown. Excuse me, I'm clearly running out of time. And my voice runs out exactly at 7 p.m., so I'll have to stop here. The views and opinions expressed on this program have been those of the participants and not necessarily the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT. Next week will be different, and I think it's fair to say better. Thank you for being part of what's left. For more information about anything that has been happening in the past hour, you can email anarchy@wmbr.org and all will be revealed. Please stay tuned for music for human beings coming up in a few moments. This is WMBR Cambridge. Thank you.
Cabin Fee Music for Human. I am Dr. Jalas Sakran, and I welcome you. Dr. Jalas Sakran here on Music for Human, communicating to you from the past. Where the sound originates and then spreads slowly and noisily. We have with us here an expert on sound, Aurora, vocal specialist. Welcome, Aurora.
Vocal therapist. Thank you for having me on the show, Dr. Jalas.
Vocal therapist, Aurora.
That's right.
Thank you once again.
And it's such a beautiful image you have just evoked in all of us. This outward spreading of joy and music and sound through time and space.
Through both time and space. Like the droplet of water in the pool.
And we are all sticks in the pool, allowing the waves to wash over us.
And very quickly, as we are gentle with our speech, a beautiful pattern begins to emerge on the surface of the water. But if, like the braying of the donkey, many people loudly or harshly speak, then the pattern disappears and all that remains is noise.
But the noise itself can be beautiful in a way. The sharp, peaking ripples. Not necessarily circular or spherical. But with their own interesting and chaotic shape.
Indeed, indeed. And it is so like you, Aurora, to see beauty even in chaos. Well, thank you again for joining me this evening.
Thank you for having me on the show again.
We also have with us Professor Levine, mystic Jewish professor. Welcome.
Hello.
Welcome, Professor.
And I should say that my pleasure in joining you tonight is both profound and very physical. I find that usually when I join the show, I achieve a sort of spiritual high. But tonight, I feel a little tingle throughout my body, and I feel pure physical pleasure.
So the pleasure has become something with a physical or even perhaps tangible presence.
A bit of a physical aftertaste, if you will.
Excellent. Excellent. The physical aftertaste, is this... Now you say it is physical, but is it actually accompanied with any sauces or generated fluids?
Well, I do like... I think the idea of a sauce is a very profound idea. It's a sort of liquid accompaniment of what we eat. Just like a pond or a lake can be a liquid accompaniment of our experience of the earth. So yes, in a certain metaphorical sense, my bodily pleasure in joining you all and our listeners today can be described as saucy and a bit tart as well.
I definitely appreciate the description in such flavorful language. I think it certainly communicates the sensation well.
Yes, and I am a strong believer of the idea that all physical sensations and pleasures are different manifestations of spiritual pleasure. So today I happen to experience the tasty pleasure, the tasty physical pleasure of joining you, but that is just one manifestation of true, profound spiritual delight.
Well, once again, thank you, Professor, for joining us. We also have with us, joining for the first time, Anjibi. Anjibi, who is an interpreter of dreams. Welcome, Anjibi. Anjibi.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So, Anjibi, I understand that you have some...
I believe it's Anjibi, though.
Anjibi?
Anjibi?
Anjibi.
Anjibi.
I'm sorry. So, Anjibi, I understand that you have been practicing dream interpretation for many, many time.
It is a hobby that I enjoy, yes.
And what does this exactly entail? It is like a new person describes their vision, and then from the vision you can do interpretation, or does it require an intimate knowledge of the person?
Well, a little bit of both. I think I form some opinions based on what I, you know of the person, but more so, you know, from what they've told me.
Well, and of course, and I've, as you mentioned to me before we started the show, you specialize in interpreting dreams of the stars, of the celebrities, and I guess in that context, dream interpretation is much easier because we already know so much about the lives and the internal psychological states of all the celebrities.
It's true. It's very true.
Although I must say that the public and personal personas of celebrities can be so different, and you can hear this through the anguish in their voices or the sort of halted two-facedness sometimes of their sounds.
Yes, that's true. Whenever I do hear, say, Tom Cruise in an interview, what I really hear, my deep spiritual antenna can always pick up the sound of a baby crying and wailing in anguish and sorrow underneath it all.
I feel the same way about Lindsay Lohan.
Well, and I've heard it said that the celebrities, the stars, often only dream about themselves and each other, and they don't deign to dream about non-celebrities. Have you found that to be the case?
I think it's hard sometimes when you're in that world to think outside that world.
Hmm.
So it's possible, yes.
That is a very profound thought.
And yet our dreams can stretch so far, even the word star. It encompasses so much more than these celebrities. It's almost as if we are raising them to the heavens in our thoughts. But do the heavens not sometimes look down upon the earth and think, ah, this blue sphere with little dots of brown, how precious it must be?
What, the dots of brown being?
Well, the land masses, of course, on Earth.
Those are brown.
Well, they appear so celestially.
I am colorblind. I always thought they were green.
Mm. If you take a spiritual journey within yourself, out into the celestial landscape, you can look down upon the Earth and see it in full color.
I have to say, Aurora, I do find your voice today to be somewhat enhanced spiritually. I feel like a weight must have been lifted from your shoulders recently.
Yes, it has. Actually, last night I discovered that my vocal polyps were due to a lack of sodium, and I've consumed several pickles.
Pickles. Yeah, I do find that pickles are excellent for my singing voice. I quit smoking several years ago in order to regain my falsetto.
Mm. Well, I'm not thinking Aurora specifically means that generally salt has an enhancing quality to the voice, but in certain circumstances the sodium is required for as a curative.
That's exactly right. Sodium is usually detrimental to the voice, as is extraordinary amounts of milk and yogurt and ice cream.
Now, is it possible to actually pickle your vocal cords themselves?
That is possible, although only ancient practitioners in Siberia around 1300 BC were known to pickle their vocal cords, usually the vocal cords of their enemies, and then consume them later in front of the widows and
I imagine one would have to hold vinegar in one's throat for many years in order to achieve true vocal cord pickling.
Well, of course, this entailed the removal of the vocal cord from the enemy, usually using one of several... of course, I know nothing about weapons, but you have to use apparently a special type of knife in order to remove the vocal cords while keeping them intact, as they are under such an extraordinary amount of physical pressure. And of course, I want to add, of course, that spiritually, you can pickle your enemy's vocal cords without causing any physical harm, but it can ruin them in such a stronger way.
Yeah, and I believe also, I mean, so in addition to literally brining the cord, it is possible to scar the vocal cord through excessive grunting, which has been known to happen also to many ancient tribes.
But I do find grunting itself can be a very sort of freeing experience, that as modern human beings living in modern civilization, we go through our daily existence with nary a grunt. We simply speak and speak and speak. And sometimes sitting down and getting in touch with your inner hunter-gatherer and your primitive self, your Stone Age man or woman, letting out some deep felt grunts at some basic pleasure can really be freeing.
It can also be extremely eloquent, I think, but it is sometimes these damaging experiences that are part of...
I might propose that if we perhaps receive some callers, we might perform some sort of group grunting exercise, sort of a group activity to free ourselves.
So, of course, the professor speaks of callers, and what he's referring to is that the show is not really centered on our...
discussions.
Or our spreading of our mental seed, but more about mingling and...
mingling the seeds.
Mingling and crossing the boundaries of time, which are placed between us and you.
If you'd like to mingle with us, our number is 617-253-8810, and we have two lines open to widen our circle. I'd like to add that I often use grunting as a vocal exercise for those especially who have difficulty releasing their emotions.
And what is it that the grunting exercise achieves?
It allows them to experience an extreme release. Our engineer is indicating that we have our first caller.
Let's bring them on. Marhaban, caller.
Welcome to the air, caller.
Caller.
We seem to have been called by a television.
We may merely have an inattentive caller.
I think.
Saturday and be gone. In the first grade,
I think the caller has lost his way in either time or space.
As is so easy. But yes, a life without grunting is much like a life without antibiotics.
I do have to say I do miss Monica Seles, the tennis player. She had an interesting...
Well, do you find generally tennis players have more spiritually healthy dreams as a result of their grunts?
Their grunts, they're able to express themselves more sometimes physically in that way. But
yes, I've heard it said that the female tennis player circuit is full of
grunting.
How should we say, mutual physical expression.
I agree.
Now, is tennis now the most wholesome sport now that golf has sort of fallen by the wayside?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think.
I mean, the interesting thing to me is that it's likely that golf suddenly has a, you know, should have a newfound popularity among a certain segment of the population.
You mean following the Tiger Woods debacle?
Exactly, yeah, the Tiger Woods events.
Let's try to connect with that caller again. Caller, a second try.
Are you with us, caller?
I think it's a bit of grunting on the caller's part, perhaps.
Hello, neighbor.
Hello.
Well, that was a good example of some grunting without a terrible amount of emotion.
And of course, I think we do appreciate silent listeners who call in and don't say a word, but if some of our listeners decide to be more eloquent, we'd be happy to talk to you.
Speak about those grunts that our caller
Emitted.
Well, that's not the word I'm looking for, but the word escapes me. When one grunts, one must think deep within themselves and connect with their spirit and think, what is it that is holding me back? You must visualize the cage that is around you. It's a glass cage. And with your grunts, you must shatter it and allow yourself to fly free into the skies.
Now this idea of liberation, I've understood that this is often a common component of dreams on GB. And do you have any particular insight into liberation via dreams? And of course, flying dreams are known to be very common. Have you yourself experienced any liberation dreams or flying dreams?
Of course. Many times.
When were you in these flying dreams, were you able to soar above the skies? Or was it more of a gliding, a hand gliding dream, or a wing flapping dream?
It's more than I'm bouncing in the clouds.
Bouncing, wow.
I've always had a special connection. I think as a child, you always want to feel like you're able to jump on them. I don't know.
I hear of a boy once who climbed out of an airplane to play in the clouds, and the results were tragic, actually.
I sympathize.
They're not really bouncy at all.
No.
Yeah, I
mean, just really wet, mostly.
In large part. But in my experience also with actors, of course, I've not had the pleasure of working with celebrity actors, but it is constantly a struggle to straddle the two personalities that the actor has. So there is the stage personality, which extends beyond the suit that he wears for a particular role, but simply the intimate knowledge that he gives to his viewers, which must be magnified manifold for these celebrity actors. And hence a separation will occur where the soul must have two faces and it becomes a schizophrenic soul. So there is a constant struggle, and in the visions that the actor has, it is often of one aspect or character in the personality consuming the others literally.
And I think this is a theme that we've touched upon many weeks past. I think all of our lives, all of our daily existence can be viewed as a sort of a play of some sort. We all have different personas that we put on in various circumstances. And to some degree, we can control the persona that we present to people, and we can actually modify it. And one can think of this as one of our characters consuming the other. And I think Shakespeare said that life is but a serial TV drama.
Well, Professor Levine, I must butt in here. The problem with these actors and spies is that they cannot ever allow their true selves leak through. They must be constantly vigilant and watchful that it is not them that is portrayed. It is someone or something.
With the exception of Christopher Walken, I believe.
Well, true. Christopher Walken is constantly in that form. But an actor who's playing someone who's completely against their own morals and beliefs and is quite different from their own soul will have these fractures in themselves as well as spies. This was seen often during the Cold War.
Is this why actors usually are... My understanding is that according to the ancient Hindu tradition, at least, actors are usually reincarnated as toads. And I think that was a sort of result of their... This kind of fracturing in their psyche that occurs through acting all the time actually results in negative karma, which forces them to be reincarnated as a lesser, as an amphibious being.
Or perhaps it's positive karma allowing them to finally be satisfied with their two-faced lives.
Now, I've heard recently about this sort of, this animal, I think it's a sea slug, which has a brain. It is born with a brain. And it lives through most of its existence using this brain to navigate the seas, to find food, and to live. Until finally it finds a nice rock, a nice niche that it can attach itself to. And the rest of its life will be attached to this little rock without any movement or navigation. At that single point when the sea slug attaches itself to its rock, it then consumes its own brain. It consumes its own brain because the brain at that point is no longer needed for its existence and therefore is a source of nourishment. And I wonder if human beings can ever reach that stage of existence, that tranquility, where we can consume our own brains.
Or that loss of sensibility.
I think it's rare for anyone at any time in their lives to really accept that... that their existence is no longer required. They have achieved the objectives that they have been born or created to achieve. And I think since given the choice to live or die, almost everyone at any time would choose to continue to live. It is difficult for anyone to be satisfied at the moment of their death.
Well, this is true at least in the Western traditions, perhaps, but I believe in some of the Eastern religions, there is a strong idea that the true ultimate goal is to play out the role that your individuality has on the world and then submerge yourself into it finally to realize that you are truly one with the rest of existence. But going back to this dream interpretation, which Anjibi is so much an expert in, and I think she really does love to talk about this issue. I did have a dream once regarding flying, several times in fact, but never was I able to soar like a bird. In the first instance, I was able to jump very high, maybe 5 or 6 feet in the air, and then through very strenuous physical effort, through flapping my arms in some complicated maneuver, I was able to stay aloft and sort of glide for a few feet until I started to fall, then flap my arms again and get a little bit of a boost, and sort of, in a very awkward way, fly and glide.
Do you think that there's something prohibiting you from reaching that point?
Yeah, I think there must have been some sort of spiritual impediment to my ability to actually soar in the clouds. And in this dream, there was this evil husband and wife duo that had enslaved me, in fact. And I was their slave. And when I realized that I could jump in the air and flap my wings and glide, I was able to escape from their clutches. And I was running and flying and they were chasing me. And I could never quite achieve that soaring ability of the eagle. But instead I had the kind of half-flying ability of, say, the owl or the flying squirrel. And so as a result, I've always personally identified with the flying squirrel as my sort of animal avatar.
In my own experience, many of my earlier visions were pointing in some indirect way at a need to focus more clearly on a spiritual journey. I recall very, very early on a dream where I was dreaming, and I awoke from the dream in a dream carrying some artifact of the interior dream.
How many dreams was this? So this is three dreams.
It was a dream within a dream, so a total of two dreams, but it, because of the nesting, becomes four dreams.
And of course, existence itself, as we all know, is the dream of some higher being.
It may be.
It may be, at least.
It may be.
And of course, as I should say, we had that one mute caller, and if any other callers would like to share their own dream experiences, our number is 617-253-8810.
But the result of the vision was that I learned that it is critical always to so in the dream within a dream, I found myself carrying a very valuable stone, and I awoke from this dream carrying the stone, much to my surprise. So when I woke from the dream with the out dream, I searched for the stone, not realizing that I had fully awoken. But I felt later, of course, at the moment I was very disappointed I had not acquired the stone. But later this taught me that there were lessons in the visions, and that I should seek them, that it was something I could keep without absorbing the consequences of the vision. It was an early bit of guidance.
I wonder, Dr. Jalas, in your dreams, which of your senses is the most powerful? I think generally for most people, vision
it
and
is
seeing
smell.
Is the most powerful smell for you.
Almost exclusively.
So your dreams consist almost purely of smells.
And the shadow of other senses only remain.
Now, of course, I assume that Aurora's dreams would consist mostly of listening, of sounds.
Well, oddly enough, a good majority of my most terrifying dreams, I cannot hear a thing, and I am almost lost in the world with only my vision to guide me.
Now, I personally, my personal favorite of the five senses is that of touch. And in fact, I am considered fairly big expert in the world on touch and the effect that touch can have on our spiritual journey and our spiritual psyche. And so generally my dreams are very touch heavy. There's a lot of contact, and I especially enjoy and specialize in the touch between human beings. I think that this is the most important kind of touch, the most important sensory experience that we can have.
And there are so many ways to experience touch also. I think that people rarely consider that sound itself may be experienced by vibration. But also, this is sometimes mentioned that inhalation also can be a touch sensation, to breathe and to really feel the air, especially a thick air or viscous honey-like air, can fill one's lungs and line it with dew, which can be to the person uninitiated a very uncomfortable and even irritating feeling,
right,
or terrifying.
And I myself, and it's part of my daily practice, I actually aerate my entire house with a honey and dewy mist.
It's something to embrace.
I wake up every morning and I collect the dew from the grass and I bring it in and I spray it into the room with a little bit of honey mixed in. And then throughout the day I get to breathe this kind of slightly viscous, misty air with a honey touch.
Which you place on ceremonial mirrors.
Of course.
And this extracts the qualities of the dew. This is actually, I know that it has a feeling of a personal tradition, but it is an ancient one also.
Is it? This is a tradition in the Arab literature?
No, it's actually, it is Nepalese. There is a small community that uses mirrors in this way to evaporate the dew and then to inhale it and then to fall into a trance and fall asleep immediately after breakfast.
Mm.
It's interesting, but so many cultures actually cut off some of their senses in order to fall into these trances,
mm-hmm.
or allow themselves to overabsorb substances or underabsorb other substances. And somehow the body, when cut off or saturated with these things like oxygen or water, it can allow itself to move into a different space-time, into a different
meditative state. I know that in meditation, of course, one of the prerequisites is to find a quiet environment and a dark environment so that one can focus purely on the internal psyche, the internal state of being.
Well, this is exactly the point I'm making, Professor Levine. Some meditations require an excess of concentration, whilst yet others require that you break your concentration and you break your body and mind and allow what's left to just float into the air.
Yes, I have heard of these monks who will visit Great Flags, Six Flags Great Adventure, and they will queue up. You often will see these saffron-robed monks, Tibetan monks, lined up for these roller coasters.
Mm.
And the purpose is to sit on the roller coaster and achieve this kind of sensory overload, mm-hmm. and excitement, which can actually lead to a deep meditative trance, so that at the beginning they'll be screaming with joy and ecstasy, and by the end of the ride they'll actually be more or less asleep.
I think it is important that this diminishment must occur, that there is a simultaneous enhancement and also diminishment, as Aurora mentioned, so that we take the sensation that in the case of the monks, of physical fear due to falling or being pierced by metal rods, and we place this in the appropriate context. Likewise, there is too much vigilantism in the human, in the natural-born person, and this must be diminished for the peaceful integration of the wild human in a society of otherwise sheep-like lambs.
Well, I think that's one of the things that's great about pure physical pleasure.
Mm.
One can lose oneself in a particular sense, in a particular pleasure, to the extent that one forgets about everything else. One forgets about one's own psychological history and one's own environment, and one can purely experience the joy of, say, eating a cheeseburger.
Well, this can have negative consequences if one relies on a certain physical input, a certain physical sensation, in order to reach the state of bliss. One can easily succumb to problems such as obesity or overdose or even overhydration.
The result of all of these, I feel it is critical that they are placed in a spiritual context. To the unreflecting mind, the experience can only be terrifying and at best meaningless, but in the most dangerous examples, it can be shattering and vaporizing.
Well, I guess in the ultimate stage of humanity, when we might be able to achieve what that sea slug can achieve when it eats its own brain, which is a state where anxiety and worry and cognition itself is simply unnecessary. One simply is as part of the world, and one exists. And I wonder, Anjibi, oh, you seem so happy that I have turned to you for questioning. Anjibi,
yes.
Have you ever experienced or heard about a dream, or perhaps a dream of a celebrity, where the goal of the dream is to achieve this primordial state of being where consciousness itself is unnecessary?
I think it's every star or celebrity's dream to reach that state.
Mm. Now, I've heard that some celebrities play this game called Russian Roulette. And, of course, as many of you know, Russian Roulette is this game where you take an old-fashioned revolver, place one bullet in the revolver, spin the barrel randomly, and then place one shot against one's head. So, basically, 1/6 probability of one dying from the shot. I don't recommend this game.
No, and
it's
and
dangerous, in fact.
And like many things in popular culture, it has no origin in Russia.
It's not actually Russian roulette, yeah.
No, it is not.
Yeah, in fact, I think it's from Alabama, so it's Alabamian roulette would be appropriate. But I've heard that a famous American writer talked about his experience playing Russian roulette. I think it was something Miller, maybe perhaps John Miller, was a 20th century American novelist. And he grew up, I think, in the 20s. And he said that in his late adolescence, his teenage years, his early 20s, he would actually play Russian roulette. He would really play it once every few months. He would put the bullet in and spin the barrel and shoot. And the reason he did this was because he felt that life was very boring otherwise. It was too boring for him to stand it.
And to me it is amusing that, again, without any self-reflection or analysis, that the creature here has taken and hijacked the system that they are placed in. So they wish to feel absolute fear to manipulate their instincts.
Yeah, somehow he needed that rush of adrenaline to feel alive. Perhaps his life in his society in which he lived was too constraining and he didn't have the opportunities to fully express his identity and his personhood. But somehow playing this Russian roulette would sort of calm him down for several months until he felt the need to do it again. And I wonder if he was sort of struggling towards this idea of pure existence.
I believe he was struggling towards the opposite, personally. Many of us feel so constrained in society when we are here without danger on a day-to-day basis. We do not see in front of us the fear of death, the smell of the lion, the sound of its roar.
Mm.
But we are conditioned to experience this fear on a daily basis.
In my mind, the person with further education may have a bipolar response because the same individual who sought to experience ultimate fear could have realized that at any moment his life could be puffed away. Very simply, he could no longer be alive. At the same time, so this may make one fear the possibility of death in this game, as one might fear living. So, in other words, without fear, the alternative response is simply to live every moment in ultimate fear, knowing that. That simply it is so easy to die. Well, if you'd like to call in, we'll make one last attempt. The number is 617-253-8810, and we can share with you our ultimate fear, the unknown caller. Marhaban, caller.
Hi. Marhaban.
Welcome.
Have you ever put any thought to the idea of prescribing experience as a prerequisite for life?
Well, caller, experience is one thing that we've always had, even beyond the womb.
Mm.
It is not necessarily the physical experience. It is not necessarily something you can feel or touch. And yet every baby gazes at its own mother.
Let's
But in the womb? Before the womb?
Before
what
the
womb. What is the little spermie experience?
Before the womb there is
we
also...
We are all of us so much more than gametes before we are produced.
Wiggling.
Let's bring
more than that.
A second voice in, caller. Let's
to
bring
join
two.
The first, yes.
Caller two, marhaban. Caller two.
Caller two, yes. I am someone who plays Russian roulette in moments of self-doubt, and...
Congratulations on winning.
Yes. Yeah. Well, is it winning or is it losing? I do not know.
And did you get, caller two, what you expected from the experience? Or was it a random experiment in life psychology?
I play Russian roulette when I do not know if the deity or the fates or Mother Nature or wishes me to remain on Earth, if there is any purpose for me being on Earth. And by playing Russian roulette, I seek the answer. And
can you just use a magic eight ball? Or it seems like there's a lot of other methods to do that.
Well, and even to take the issue of simplicity to the limit, caller two, it may be that your continued existence, is that not evidence that that there is an intention by a higher power that you remain alive?
This is how I choose to interpret it, although it could be that the higher power is so totally bored with me and all my ilk that it is of no relevance to the higher power whether, you know, which chamber the bullet is in.
Well, caller, I must say here that your tone of voice is so sad and defeated, and I must remind you that deities tend not to reach their hand in and grab bullets and smash them into their followers' brains. And as long as you remain positive and reach out to yourself, you are the one that is guiding where that bullet is.
Oh, I thought you were saying you can keep playing. Well, my question is, how do you know when you're done if you're just playing with yourself?
Caller, I think that it is not a contest, so it is simply the first experience, or another way to...
Well, but how many bullets? I mean, how many times do you pull the trigger? Just one?
So, caller, if the goal is to empty every chamber, then this may occur.
Well,
but
then he'd be dead, though.
Precisely, if that is one's goal.
Right. Okay.
But often, as Professor Levine states, the goal is simply to experience an extreme sensation, and it may be only a single...
Yes, and I should say
trial.
That I think in modern times, one might prefer bungee jumping, or perhaps...
with a rope that may or may not be too frayed to use?
Well, I think that's unnecessary, in fact. One's body will interpret the free fall as the possibility of death.
Oh,
and
yeah.
One will have the same effect on the body and the psychology as if one actually were experiencing the possibility of death. So I think bungee jumping, say hang gliding,
or diving into an icy lake.
What's it called when you parachute
diving
from an airplane? Mm-hmm. Skydiving, yes. These are possibilities for the modern human being.
And yeah. Caller too, may I suggest that you perhaps take up tarot reading in order to access those deities and access the other part of your mind and interpret it, and that will give you a much more complex an accurate response.
I mean, my personally, before reaching any spiritual bliss, I found the sensation of walking in the dark alleys in Boston to be a near-death life rush experience with full of life-saving hormones. So, I mean, I agree with Professor Levine here that there are many ways to... Or randomly eating at certain restaurants. It's also...
Long John Silver's is scary.
It may be. It may indeed be so.
Yeah. Let's go back to this other question. Because I never got a real answer. Because I think that to be able to walk around outside, you should have to... First, watch a couple Disney movies, Pinocchio, and then maybe, like, be able to cook some fries or something. You gotta have some use to you.
The basic skills and a basic amount of context so that other creatures may have a common reference with you.
Yeah.
Well, I did. I personally wanted to have this ability to cook fries once, so it was actually extremely easy to learn. You can learn how to cook fries for free. You don't need to take lessons. You simply go to your local McDonald's and say, I would like a job. They will train you.
Did they give it to you?
They give you the job, they train you for a few days, and then you quit, and now I know how to make fries and hamburgers.
That's cool. How do you get that much oil, though?
Well, it helps to buy the oil in bulk, I think.
Okay.
Or perhaps to produce it yourself. I mean, one can buy many, say, if one wants a very spicy oil, one can buy many hot peppers.
Well, I thought you were going to say use those Neutrogena pads that you kind of put on and then pull them off and they're all...
That's a very natural type of oil. But I think also it is possible to have that kind of pre-programming using a spiritual means. It can be through meditation that one contacts a fetus. Let's bring a third voice here in the final minutes of the program. Caller, marhaban.
Marhaba to you.
Thank you, caller. And so, caller, how is it that you have been born with this knowledge?
Are you speaking with me now?
I was a moment ago, but remember we are separated by time as well as space.
My God, these current things you say, I go to a place that is purple with yellow letters, and they read we're doing our best.
So, caller, where are you from? You sound like you have a bit of a, perhaps, Nepalese accent. Is that correct?
Have you ever seen the movie by the director Woody Allen?
Which film would you be referring to?
Zelig.
Huh.
Well, caller one, I'd like to address your question, seeing as how you've posted. I believe that, and this is my own personal worldview, and I would like to hear yours when I am done, but I believe that all of us are just simple fragments of a collective unit, a collective soul, that somehow has and does not have all of the knowledge of all of the pieces. And so when we are born into a new body, we are fresh, and we perhaps do not have those pieces of knowledge that would, under your definition, allow us to be alive, but... as we are part of the collective, we are in a way alive, and we will one day return back to that state of great knowledge.
Yes, when the waters go down.
Well, I also wonder, since we have this unique opportunity of having Anjibi with us, do any of our callers have any dreams which they would like to have interpreted?
I had a weird dream last night.
Please do tell.
I can try to tell it real quick. It was about, I talked to Sigur Rós, the band members. I don't know if you know about that band. They're, like, really good, like, kind of shoegazy rock.
No,
electronica. I called them up, and they were swinging around my neighborhood, and I said, hey, come by. But my neighborhood was actually this, like, giant mansion, and there was a party and stuff. So I was really excited about Sigur Rós coming to the party with them. And they show up, and Björk is with them, because they're all from Iceland, I guess. Björk came out, and I gave her a hug. She hugged me really nicely, and she had all these lumps all over her body. Like, it was, like, extreme cellulite. Like, lots of really lumpy bits. Kind of like pancake batter when it's not stirred enough. Just, like, really weird lumps that you could kind of move around. But when she hugged me, it was, like, this warmth was infused into my body. Almost through the lumps, but I wasn't through the lumps. It was just kind of like made up of the lumps, I guess.
Similar to hugging an actual cake batter.
Yes. Less messy. Pretty messy on my end, but that's another story.
So hugging cake batter in a bag.
Yeah, like a big bag of, just like boobs. So we like... went up and just partied a lot, and then I said, hey, teach me how to hug warmly, like you. And she was like, with time. And I was like, wow. That was it.
Excellent. Anjibi, any thoughts on this?
I feel like you're searching for something there that maybe you're missing at home, you know? Looking for a little warmth in your life that maybe you're missing.
A little Bjork,
yes. I mean, she has starred in a few films. I don't know if you've seen them, but she has the maternal role in one movie with her son is blind and deaf. It's maybe something you should check out.
That's cool, because I am deaf, so That might work out.
Yes, you should definitely check that out.
And GB, what do you make of the lumps in this stream?
Are you struggling with a weight issue by any chance?
No.
And, you know, with my limited knowledge on GB, it seems to me to be a very simple manual perversion. That would be my analysis here.
So the caller is just simply a pervert.
Well, I would not. Yeah. I would hesitate to use the term because it is so loaded. But I would definitely say that there is a manifest perversion in his inner psyche.
I think we knew that.
When
already.
I'm loaded, it's probably true. It's probably true.
And caller, I'm curious, is there anything that you do to lower any of your mental faculties, or is it simply from birth?
Oh, just from birth. I probably had some sort of encephalitis or insufflation when I was a young child, but
it is a common affliction.
Yeah, I'm a little retarded. I think if they gave me a test, it would just be like, "You're 10. You're a little retarded. 10 out of 100.
Well,
not that bad, but."
Cognition and your ability to speak is at least with us still.
Thanks. Actually, this is all a pre-recording, so it took me about 40 days to write all this down.
So, caller, like us, you are reaching through both time and space.
That's so funny. Okay, great. Well, you too, and I'll see you guys later. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you once again for joining us this evening, caller. And it is so unfortunate that even beyond time we have lost ourselves there. So thank you to our callers, and thanks to Anjibi for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
And to Professor Levine.
Thank you very much.
And of course also to Aurora.
Namaste.
I'm Dr. Jalis Sakran here on Music for Human, New Age Talk Radio, with an emphasis on you here on WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM every Friday at 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Hipster Happy Hour. Ma'a salama.
Safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
Hello and welcome to the Hipster Happy Hour, coming at you live from 88.1 WMBR in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Today has been an exciting day, graduation day for many of the seniors, master students, and PhD students here at MIT. Lots of old crufty types and lots of newly crufty types hanging out, having a good time, celebrating the first milestone of many to come. It's really an interesting ceremony. You see these people walk out into a Killian court, 10,000 people cheering them on to go get this piece of paper, and they dress them all up in a terrible black muumuu. Seems like sort of an odd choice of dress for such a